us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by the fake news media. That's what they've done and what they're doing. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
When Trump supporters stormed the Capitol a year ago, they were motivated in part by what some call the big lie. It's a conspiracy theory embraced by former President Trump that falsely claims the 2020 presidential election was stolen by Democrats. Now, none of that is true. Audits from journalistic outlets, election committees, even conservative groups have found over and over and over again that there is no evidence of widespread fraud in the 2020 election. But even though it's a lie, a lot of Republicans believe it. According to one poll from Monmouth University, roughly two-thirds of Republicans believe Biden's 2020 election win was illegitimate. And last year, 147 congressional Republicans voted to overturn the election results. Republicans' belief in the big lie has become a litmus test for the party. After the break, we're diving into how the GOP got here and what this means for the 2022 midterm election. I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A Podcast. A reminder that you can join future conversations. Download our 1A Vox Pop app and leave us a voicemail. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us now is Allison Dagnes, a political science professor at Shippensburg University in Pennsylvania. Allison, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us, Hunter Walker, writer of the Uprising newsletter and contributor to Rolling Stone. He's been following the investigations into January 6th. Hunter, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Hunter, you were at the rally and reporting on the ground the day of the attack. You were also a White House correspondent while Trump was in office. When did the narrative around the election being stolen start?
Well, you know, I covered the entirety of the Trump administration as a White House correspondent for Yahoo. And, you know, it's important to remember that the president seeded this narrative even prior to Election Day, you know, raising questions about absentee ballots and voter ID issues and, you know, these baseless allegations of fraud, you know, have existed for a long time within Republican circles. And he really leaned into that even before the voting.
Allison, how much did conservative media, including far-right outlets, play a role in spreading the conspiracy theory and misinformation around election security?
Oh, they played a major role. They amplified all of the former president's claims. They actually had, for decades, had helped to build on these grievances and resentments on the right that had been growing and increasing, that created the conditions for former President Trump to come in and say, you really cannot believe what the mainstream media are telling you. You shouldn't believe what government officials are saying. And so the right-wing media has been playing a role for quite some time. And now that they have solidified around former President Trump, they really did some heavy lifting of not only amplifying but repeating all of his messages. And when their audiences heard these claims over and over again. And when they didn't get any news outside of this right-wing media circle, they believe it. And, you know, that's human nature, I suppose. But it really is deeply problematic.
Hunter, last month, texts between former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows and Fox News hosts Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham were leaked. And they show the hosts asking Meadows to have Trump respond to the riot because he was, quote, destroying his legacy. What do those texts tell us about the unique relationship Trump had with the media, or at least a portion of the media?
Well, first off, I mean, it's obviously totally non-journalistic behavior for television hosts to be engaged with someone like Mark Meadows and advocating a specific position. If you follow the sort of internecine dynamics at Fox News, folks like Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity are part of their, you know, supposed opinion division, which they see as divided from news. I don't tend to think that distinction is made clear to viewers. But it also shows how intimately involved right-wing media was in every aspect of the Trump administration, and specifically, you know, the promotion of these election lies. And, you know, back in August, President Trump, you know, he's been removed from Twitter, but he's been issuing these statements. They're essentially email version of tweets sent out to his supporters and reporters. And in one, you know, he complained that every time the media brings up his accusation that the 2020 election was somehow rigged, it points out that he makes this without evidence. And he said there's plenty of evidence. So I tried to, you know, take this at face value and be fair. And for my newsletter, The Uprising, I reached out to Trump's spokesperson and I said, you know, he says that we're falsely saying without evidence, but he hasn't shown any of this evidence. Do you have any you want to send me? And Trump himself actually sent my Substack a lengthy statement outlining his supposed evidence of election fraud. And what I did was I went through it, and point by point, I found it was baseless, but I also found something more important. Every single one of these claims cited by the president as evidence for his allegation that the election was rigged came from what I started to dub the election conspiracy theory industrial complex. And what I mean by that is it was a blend of right-wing media, Republican politicians, and right-wing activist organizations. In some cases, it was media like Fox News, but in other cases, it was outlets such as the Daily Caller News Foundation or The Federalist, which, much like these activist groups, are funded by, you know, Republican dark money. So, you know, these conspiracy theories have an organized infrastructure behind them that includes, you know, Republican conservative donor money, media outlets and activist organizations funded by the donor money. And what you end up having is weapons grade propaganda that I think leads to some of this fealty and adherence within the GOP to some of these blatantly false narratives.
And very briefly, Hunter, you've been following the investigations into the insurrection on January 6th. How much more do we know now about elected officials' involvement that day?
Mm-hmm. You know, the investigation is clearly looking at this. They're also looking at, you know, they're taking a very holistic view of January 6th. They're looking at the multiple events that were held that day. They're looking at the planning for them, and they're looking for the propagation of these false narratives. One point I always want to make clear is a lot of this just played out before our eyes. We know elected officials were involved. Trump was on a stage with members of Congress, and in the final 120 words of that speech, he told people to march to the Capitol. So questions like Ali Alexander's allegation that the campaign called him are almost irrelevant, because we know that the president was involved and that he made that call himself. At the same time, through witness testimony and through reporting and through text messages, they are looking at these planning sessions that were held with members of Congress, I think, which was first reported by me on Rolling Stone. And these planning sessions, you know, provide a more precise idea of how the members were involved. Not only were they speaking at these events, but they were working with activists to plan rallies that challenged the election around the country, and they also took part in the objection to the election on the House floor. So again, this was a multi-pronged effort that involved Republican members of Congress at almost every stage, and the investigation is delving into that.
And we're discussing how the big lie has become the new litmus test for the Republican Party and how it's been playing out across key battleground states like Arizona. There, the election was directly challenged and audited. That audit confirmed Biden's win in the state by more than 10,000 votes. Shelley Kais is the chair of Pima County's Republican Party. She's an elected official in the second most populous county in Arizona. We spoke to her on Monday, and I want to be very transparent here. We're very hesitant to put anyone on the air who repeats lies or makes unsubstantiated claims about election fraud, but we also think it's important, especially now, to give you a clear picture of how many elected officials in the GOP are approaching this issue. So parts of this interview were edited to remove unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud that we could not confirm were true. Let's take a listen.
Well, I think you always want to look at systems. And so our election is a system. And so we should always be looking at how we do it, what are all the processes, whether it's the voter database, whether it's the machines, whether it's signature verification, regardless of what it is. We should be conducting continuous improvement processes through our recorder's office to ensure that we have a safe, fair election.
Well, we should mention here that the Department of Homeland Security's Cyber and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, said, quote, the November 3rd election was the most secure in American history. So it sounds to me, if I'm hearing you correctly, that you don't believe their findings are accurate. Is that correct?
I have a great deal of confidence in CISA, but remember, CISA is going to look at cybersecurity. CISA is not going to look at the voter database. So from their perspective, they may be able to say that they were able to block any intrusions into the system. But that's not all there is.
But ultimately, the audit performed by Arizona found no evidence of election fraud. And again, showed Biden winning by more votes than that original tally. So are you confident in the results of the 2020 presidential election?
Well, we're not done yet. The evidence has been turned over to our attorney general, and he is conducting an investigation now.
So the findings have been verified several times. What is the end game for you? What would say to you, yes, the 2020 election was safe, secure, Biden won? Because it seems like you're not willing to say that at this point, a year into the presidency.
It's not that I'm not willing to say it. I believe that we should continue always looking at our systems and making sure that our systems are safe and free from any anomalies.
But over 40 lawsuits were filed by Republicans challenging the 2020 election. All of those lawsuits were rejected. There were four in Arizona alone. And we should note that in your own state, four of the five members of the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors are Republican. They called for an end to the audit. They said, quote, we stand united together to defend the Constitution and the Republic in our opposition to the big lie. We ask everyone to join us in standing for the truth. So this is also causing divisions in your party. Again, what is the end game? You say looking at systems. I'm sure there's an argument to be made there. But in terms of the 2020 election and saying confidently that President Biden won, there wasn't massive voter fraud that would have caused a different outcome, can you just say that plainly?
Not until I see the results from Attorney General Brnovich.
Are you at all concerned about the impact on Republican voters? Safe elections, a peaceful transfer of power is a cornerstone of the American democracy. And many people look at January 6th and see that cornerstone now standing with many, many cracks and this continued repetition of the lie or distrust and the outcome of the 2020 election. It's putting deeper cracks into that foundation. How do you justify that?
it's hard to justify. But what we're seeing is a distrust that's going across government. So as we keep moving the goalposts on, whether it's the CDC or the FDA, as we keep moving the goalpost on the coronavirus, we see people losing trust in government. That's really the big issue here.
But again, Shelley, I would say that there are many anecdotes, but the data doesn't support anecdotes leading to some sort of widespread voter fraud. So as you look ahead to 2022 and the midterm elections, how do you send a message to voters who you want to show up to the voting booth to cast their votes for your candidates that the votes they're casting are safe and secure, that the American democracy, the people rely on, again, that transfer of power, that is secure while continuing to cast doubt on the outcome of the 2020 election?
We are fully prepared to do that in Pima County. We are building a group of individuals, and I say group, but that's a minimal number because we're actually looking at more than 1,000 who will be working as poll workers, observers, signature verification, working in the tabulation room. We are calling our base to get involved and make sure that the system is working as it is intended to work. And we have such passion in the Republican Party to make sure that we do have a fair and safe election, that we are already off and running with that. So our primary is in August, and of course the general's in November. We are already training people to be working at the polling places, the tabulation rooms, etc.
That was Pima County Republican Party Chair Shelley Keis. And Hunter and Allison, I'd love to hear your reactions to what we just heard. Hunter, go ahead.
So Arizona has really played a central role in all of this. And as I think you correctly pointed out and pushed back in that interview, we're talking about a state with a Republican governor, Maricopa County, which, you know, has been a center of this audit and some of these conspiratorial claims, has Republican officials overseeing the election. So essentially you have, you know, party leaders like Keis going against their own officials who are clear that there was not fraud. What I find really interesting in, you know, her comments is she's talking about, rather than going with those officials who've not, you know, essentially given her the results she wanted, turning to Mark Brnovich, the state's attorney general. And he's actually also a candidate in the Senate election there due for this year, where, you know, he's run on a campaign of kind of leaning into COVID misinformation and leaning into some of this other stuff that is red meat for the Republican base. And I think that's really the point here. You know, part of the reason we don't see more officials going against this stuff, and part of the reason we see others leaning into it, is that this is indeed successful with the base. I mean, even as we see polling showing that, you know, the majority of Americans are concerned about January 6th, Suffolk University and USA Today just released a poll that showed 3/4 of Republicans are sympathetic to the rioters who went into the Capitol. So, you know, in certain places, I mean, Arizona, the Senate race last time, the Democrats won it by like 3 points. In some places, this can be a really effective political strategy. And I think when you see a partisan party official ignoring experts, ignoring, you know, members of their own party, and punting this over to an actual candidate, what you're seeing is a political strategy.
We'll hear more from you and our guests in just a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're discussing the GOP's response to the January 6th insurrection and how it's playing out in different states. I want to bring another voice into the conversation now, Stan Barnes. He's a Republican and former state senator in Arizona, now a political consultant. Stan, welcome to the program.
Jen, it's great to be on the program. I've enjoyed listening so far.
Well, we should say that you did vote for Trump in 2020, but believe that Biden's win was legitimate. How much of an anomaly is it to take that position in your state's GOP right now?
I don't think it's the anomaly that some might expect. It's the echo chamber of the far right feeds itself. The election was stolen. We got to do something, et cetera. But the broad mainstream of Arizona center right politics is more of a shoulder shrug. Like, okay, Biden won. It surprises me that Biden won in Arizona. Really surprises me. But I accept it, and I think most Republicans accept it. If your guests are missing any point to this so far, it was touched on by the Pima County chair, and it was touched on by Hunter Walker as well. What is really happening is the lack of faith in institutions, the distrust, as the chairman from Pima County Republican Party said. And as Hunter said, the base of the Republican vote in Arizona is right there in that spot, supporting of someone who is skeptical about the election, the media, being told anything by those in Washington, D.C. That's really what's happening. The Republican state senators in Arizona that caused the audit to happen are not personally offended that Joe Biden won. That's not what's driving them. And they may not even believe that the election was stolen. What they know is they're following the first rule of politics, and that is self-preservation or re-election. That everywhere you go where there are two or more Republicans gathered, the audience says, what are you going to do about this? It feels like something's wrong. We don't trust. And so the state Senate has decided within its power to have this audit. They goofed it up, totally goofed it up, and it's become a big political mess. But I think the insight I hope to share with your listeners is that none of this is happening in some weird vacuum, that a significant portion of the Arizona electorate has lost faith enough that politicians are tapping into that and leveraging it and elbowing each other to be first in the crowd with them in that skepticism. The election happens to be the moment that that's playing out right now.
Stan, when you talk about what I'm hearing everyone describe as this sort of feedback loop that's formed, where elected officials are feeding or seeding more distrust among Republican voters, that's being further amplified by conservative media. How much concern is there within the party right now, within the GOP, that that's going to break down your voting base's trust in going to the polls at all, that this could actually turn back on you in the form of low voter turnout?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jen. I don't speak for the party, but I have some insight about it. And I would say it's very low, that the opposite is happening. The Republican voter is highly energized. And I'll predict on this show that there's going to be quite a Republican success story in the 2022 election. And so that's not playing out the way some opponents of the Republicans might think. I would also point out, Jen, that it's the sowing distrust thing is not only on the right. The first time I ever heard someone say the presidency was stolen was when Hillary Clinton said it in 2016. She said that the presidency was stolen and that Donald Trump was illegitimate, and followed closely by Stacey Abrams, who said she actually won the Georgia gubernatorial race. And so this is not only a fringe right wing kind of thing. This is something that's bigger than that. If you throw in in terms of that distrust, in terms of that lack of institutional faith and scaring people of all persuasions, if you throw in what we saw with Portland burning and overtaken for 100 days and the defund the police thing, that picture is a better, fuller painting of what's really going on among a lot of grassroots people that are Republican or not Republican.
But I do think there is a distinction to be drawn between protests over racial injustice and a violent insurrection in the halls of Congress. I think we need to draw a distinction there. And granted, there have been many conversations about distrusts in institutions and in the criminal legal system. Yes, those are ongoing conversations. But what we saw on January 6th was an attempt to overturn a free and fair election. That's a cornerstone of our democracy. We're talking again about the peaceful transfer of power, and I think we need to draw a distinction there. Hunter, I'd love to hear from you on this too, because you've been following again the investigations into the January 6th insurrection. And when you look at what accountability looks like for lawmakers who did, those 147 lawmakers who voted to overturn the election results, is there likely to be any accountability there?
So let's just step back for a second, because I think there's a lot to unpack in, you know, what Stan just said. I mean, first off, I don't think it's fair to say that Hillary Clinton disputed the 2016 election. She conceded, which was not something we saw in 2020. You know, we did see Stacey Abrams raise questions about her loss, but I think, you know, there were a lot of unique factors in that race, including that she was running against the Secretary of State actually overseeing the race that they were involved in. I do think we saw Democrats dispute the legitimacy of the election in 2000 when you had people such as Roger Stone, who was actually involved again in some of this January 6th, let's call it mischief, doing things like the Brooks Brothers riot. So actually, I think, you know, if we point to past election disputes, it shows how, you know, some on the right have sort of been working on strategies like this for some time. And I think that gets back into this idea that, you know, some of this distrust, it's not happening in a vacuum. There is this feedback loop. So, for example, in Arizona, you have Attorney General Brnovich, who's running for Senate, when I think Stan is right, you know, the forecasts are good for Republicans this year. And he's sitting there leaning into distrust about the election, leaning into distrust about the COVID vaccine. He's making mandates a big part of his race. And what is happening there is essentially you're having someone saying, see, there's distrust, and using that to energize their base while also fueling the distrust, even though experts, and in the case of the COVID stuff, scientists are saying there's no legitimacy to that. I do think, though, that there is legitimacy to one point here. Stan brought up the protests that took place last summer. And I continually hear from, you know, Republicans and people on the right, there was a lot of violence last summer. You know, why don't Democrats kind of acknowledge that, right? And, you know, I covered that violence. And it's interesting to me because often when I'm talking about January 6th, people will say to me, like, you know, why did you ignore what happened in 2020? And the answer to that is I didn't. I was out there live in the streets for months. I got punched by protesters. I saw buildings lit on fire. My first post about that was entitled Night of Rage. And it was about how people broke barricades at the White House. So, you know, I don't think the media was ignoring that. I don't think the media was, you know, large scale ignoring the violence that took place last summer. But I do think that generally we're not recognizing that, you know, there is a rising climate of political violence in this country. We hadn't necessarily seen protests like that in a long time. We certainly hadn't seen anything like January 6th. In 2016, we saw a supporter of Bernie Sanders engage in a mass shooting at a practice for the congressional baseball game. I don't think that got the attention it deserved at all. In 2017, I was in Arizona at a Trump rally when, you know, there was a mass tear gassing and fight between uniformed Antifa factions and uniformed far right groups in the streets. Political violence is rising in this country. It would behoove all of us, I think, to recognize that. I do think that a bit of the difference is that on the Republican side, some of this conspiracy theorizing has an infrastructure that we just don't similarly see on the left, where it is fueled by these officials, these activist groups, this large-scale dark money, and also these media outlets. One more example, another Arizona candidate, this businessman Jim Lehman, who's running for Senate, he's actually donated millions to Justice for J6 demonstrations supporting the January 6th rioters, and that's taking place as Koch Industries, one of the biggest, you know, donors to right-wing messaging, has bought his business, providing a large cash infusion to his campaign.
Allison, I want you to just contextualize where we are in this moment when you think about this country's political history and, I guess, what most concerns you and perhaps where you see hope.
Well, it is very concerning how polarized we are. And, you know, I think Shelley's interview with you was evidence enough that there will likely never be enough evidence to satisfy her. And that's concerning as well, because when you have that kind of stalemate, you were asking about the end game. It turns everything into this existential war, right, where there is no compromise. And that's not what little d democracy is really all about. Democracy is supposed to be about compromise. It's supposed to be about shaking hands across the aisle. And we need to get back to that. And so what gives me hope is looking at a younger generation who wants to do that and who wants to meet people who might think differently than them and listen more, because I think that we're doing a lousy job of listening to one another.
That's Allison Dagnes, a political science professor at Shippensburg University. Also with us, Hunter Walker, a reporter for the Uprising newsletter and Rolling Stone, and Stan Barnes, former state senator in Arizona and president and founder of the lobbying firm Copper State Consulting Group. We also heard from the chair of Pima County's Republican Party, Shelley Keiss. Thanks to you all. Today's producer was Sophia Alvarez-Boyd. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening. We'll talk more soon. This is 1A.